Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and this is a car show. This is where you have the opportunity to call us and ask us questions, and we will discuss the issue. And it works like this. You call in, and if you're having a dinner table dispute, then just tell us what each side of the dispute is. What do you got to say about that?
Nothing.
We don't do that too often at my house because everybody knows that I am the car guy and no one wants to argue with me. My wife, Renee, is sitting here next to me. She's actually in charge of me for the next 2 days. Nevertheless, it's important to know that you give us a call and 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you're going to ask a car question about a problem, then give me your make and model and miles of your car, and then we're going to talk symptoms. It's not important to you or to me for us to decide or discuss what happened on YouTube or what you gathered on the internet. That's really not important. Symptoms are really, really important. So I ask you, does it happen all the time? Does it click? Does it not click? Is there a noise? Is the air conditioning ever cold? When you're driving down the road, if you throttle up at 60 miles an hour, is the noise there? If you just go at 65 miles an hour, is the noise there? If you drop down to 55 miles an hour, is the noise or vibration there? So that's kind of how it works.
Yep.
At our house, too, right?
Yeah. No, not always.
Yeah, really. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been in Mesa since 1970. They're the only shop in Mesa that I can really tell you will treat you right, treat you fair, and fix your car. They have ASE certified technicians. They do a really good job. They're very friendly people, and Brian and Thelma, his wife, are there most of the time. Or one or the other of them there is there most of the time. So they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. It's a good place to go if you live in Mesa or anywhere in East Tempe or anywhere in North Gilbert. It's still a good place to go. You know that we had a conversation the other day.
Okay.
About new cars.
Right.
And last night at the dinner table when we all went out with your mother's friends, I should say.
Okay.
The conversation at the men's table was all about cars.
Yes.
I wish we could talk about our sex lives. I wish we could talk we could talk about our kids, our grandkids. But we talked about cars.
Okay.
One of them went in a 30,000-mile. I may get a couple of things wrong, but I'm close. 30,000 miles, took it in to a repair shop, and we're not going to say dealer, independent repair, chain store. We're just going to say a repair shop.
Okay.
And they were told that they need to replace the spark plugs, they need a throttle body cleanup, and there was some other stuff. Now, when you're told in our industry, in my industry, when you're told you need something, typically there's a trigger. So it's time or miles.
Okay.
We do that at our shop.
Sure.
So it's always something to do with that. So he's told he needs spark plugs at 30 or 40,000 miles because it's time.
Okay.
And
I bet his owner's manual doesn't say that.
Well, no, of course not. But I am astounded that, and so the computer that's left between my ears is just running rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And after he gets done talking, and there's a variety of other things he needs because of time.
Okay.
The car might be 3 years old. It needs it. My point is the spark plugs don't wear out in your garage. I don't care what kind of car you have. They only wear out with use. Hoses wear out with use. But there is a time frame that we suggest to our customers, and we do ourselves. Mm-hmm. 80 to 100,000 miles when you're going to do a flush. Replace the hoses. You kill two birds with one stone, and in reality, it's cheaper than doing them separately.
Sure.
There's an overlap of labor.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the coolant, the heat cycle of getting hot and cool off, actually wears away at the additives, and it causes the coolant to become somewhat acidic.
Okay.
But it's not going to do it at 30,000 miles, and it's not going to do it. You're going to worry about it. You're going to worry about somewhere north of 80,000 miles up to 100,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do on our cars. That's what we do on all of our shop cars, our shuttle van, and all those other things that we have. So it's important to look at that. But I find it very convenient for us to dance between time and miles.
Sure.
Now, one of the things that time is important is tires.
Yes.
There's no rule that you have to get rid of your tires at 10 years, but the industry has adopted that to a large extent. There's a lot of us that won't rotate. We won't repair a tire. We won't do anything. We won't even touch a tire other than check the air pressure on a 10-year-old tire or north of that. It's a bad deal.
Mm-hmm.
There's two factions in this tire issue. We got lawyers on one side, and we got tire companies on the other. So each one of them has a different idea on what the future should be on a tire. The tire companies obviously would like us to expire every tire at 10 years or even earlier, because that will cause a tremendous rise in sales.
Mm-hmm.
they'll sell more tires. That's all there is to it. On the other hand, when you put an expiration date on it of 100,000 miles, the attorneys are saying, well, wait a minute. This, behind the scenes,
okay,
they'll say, this may eliminate us being able to sue the tire companies for a tire that explodes at 10 years and 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these two people that have different agendas and different needs and different wants, and so our industry is in flux, but most of us have decided 10 years is it. You know, I'm working a case right now, and it has to do with a lady who had her car into a variety of places, chain stores, dealership, independent shops. And two times she was told that she had tires that were in excess of 10,000. I'm sorry.
10 years.
I keep getting screwed up. So 10 years. So she goes to California. On her way back, a tire blows. She goes off the road. She rolls. And I think she died, her mother died, and one of the kids died, or maybe none of the kids died.
Mm-hmm.
But that was... and now the family is suing a whole bunch of people. Now, there's a couple that it went into that they didn't write it down, but there's two that wrote it on the work order. Your tires are in excess of 10 years. You need to replace them.
Yeah. Now, and we find if we touched them or anybody touched them, they're going to go after them, and you have to prove that you either did or didn't tell them.
And you're right in the sense that if you didn't write it down, there's no evidence
right
that you did that. But if you write it down, the discussion will then be, I didn't read my work order.
Mm-hmm.
You should have told me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we would have told you, how would we prove we told you? So everybody's kind of scared. And there's a couple of major tire companies that sell tires that won't even touch a tire. They mm-hmm. won't even put their fingers on the tire. Now, I'm understanding that we're changing that just a little bit. We're going to give them a chance, because we are going to air up the tire. If they come in, it's 20, and we want it at 32, then we're going to put it at 32, just to give them a chance. But there's a lot of people who think that's something that doesn't need to be done, or they think that's something new. They've never heard it before, especially the old gray-haired guys
mm-hmm.
with gray hair coming out of the neck of their shirt. They're just sure that that's a way. Not too long ago, if you remember, we had a Bounder motorhome come in. The attorney, a friend of ours, mm-hmm. had got it from his father, who had just recently died. And we found tires on there that were like 15 years old.
And a lot of people do. They let them sit, and they figure they haven't gone that many miles, so they don't want to replace them.
And that's exactly what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's the time and miles. Miles really doesn't have anything to do with it, because those tires have maybe 3,000 miles on them. In reality, though, we're talking 10 years. We're done.
Mm-hmm.
And an RV, it's even worse.
Yeah.
Because the tire sits in one spot for a very long time. Then when it is run down the road, it's loaded up, as opposed to your car that just has you in it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big difference there, but 10 years is it. Folks, you ought to ask them. Now, when they raise a car up on an oil change, there's nothing to prevent them from looking at the age. And the age of the car will be usually a four-digit, 12th week of 07. That's pretty simple. The 12th week of 17,
mm-hmm.
that's pretty easy.
Right.
So you can look at it real quick.
It's on the sidewall of the tire.
But when it's up in the oil, up for an oil change, it could be on the inside of the tire or on the outside
sure.
of the tire. So there's no real excuse
mm-hmm.
that's valid
yeah.
that would create the idea that you don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. We've got a caller. Who that might be, Gil?
That would be Dan.
Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
My question is, I got a 2006 Toyota Tundra, and a couple of days ago, I took a pressure washer, and I washed the engine, and all of a sudden, the passenger and driver's side windows will not go up and down. I checked the fuse. It's not, because the fuse is the same one that controls the power locks, and the power locks work. So I have no idea. It can't be the motor.
No, it's inside the door. How many miles are on it?
Well, it's about 112.
Okay. And there's no noise. You just push the button and nothing happens.
Nothing happens. And I checked. I mean, it's not like you've got that little lock, you know, right next to the so you can lock the window so I don't. It's not that. And the only thing I did, I mean, both the windows don't go up and down. And the only thing I've done is wash the engine with a pressure washer. And I don't know how that would affect it. But
well, it's a bad idea to chase that down. That question will be answered after the repair has been identified. So it's a really bad idea. It's not a good idea. If you come into my shop and you tell me that you pressure wash the motor and you want me to look under the hood for it, I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. It's easy enough for us to check. Why don't we just start at the switch? Why don't we? And I'm not quite sure. Does it say in your owner's manual that the electric windows are controlled by a fuse? Because most of the time it's a circuit breaker.
1 minute.
Well, it's I didn't get the owner manual. I got it downloaded, but I didn't get it with the truck.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. Is if we pop the fuse and your head is stuck in the window, it's going to be a while before somebody gets you out. But sometimes, if not all the time, we have a circuit breaker. So if you overload the window and it's hitting you on the neck, then you know maybe you count to 20 and then the window will work again. I'm going to give you something to do because you can't do the rest of it. You don't have a wiring diagram of the master switch. You probably will break it taking it out, and there's $200 or $300. So the real question is, do we have power and grounds? We have power to A and ground to B to raise the window, and then we flip those, and that lowers the window. So that's the master switch. Then from there, we're going to go to the motor inside the door. But here's something I want you to do. I want you to have your wife get in and start the car, and I want you to hold the passenger window in the down position. Have her hold it. And she counts to five. In your particular case, you're outside the car, and I want you to pound on the outside of the door, not hard enough to dent it, just hard enough to jar it. And if that doesn't do it and she's still counting to five, open it and slam it really hard. If the window moves, the motor's bad. It's that simple. You just jarred the brushes on it. That's it. You want to try something? That's it. Otherwise, your diagnostic fee is going to be take the master switch out and check it, and then take a door panel off and check the motor. And so you're going to have those, but more than likely one of those is going to be it, so you just replace it as you go along.
See, what I think is weird is that both the windows at the same time. Now, you know, for them, that's why it's got to be electrical. It's got to be, you know, a breaker or...
Okay. Why do we care what we think it is? Why are we going to waste money chasing our tails? Why is it in your best interest for us to start underneath the hood? How does that work? Now, if you go in and say, I just pressure washed my engine, and coincidentally the window started working and I want you to look under the hood, we could spend an hour or more looking at a diagram, finding the power in the ground where it originates from, and it follow it all the way from where it starts to where the switch and from the switch to the motors. That's a long time. Why don't we just go to the master switch and look for a power in the ground there? So my advice hasn't changed. Your questions are good, but I, as the industry, can answer your questions after we fix the car. And then that way we can decide. Anyway, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Since 1988 and long before anybody else in Arizona decided to create a list of the best of, I did in 1988 because the number one question on the radio was, who's a good shop? So I created this list, and the list is somebody I know, the owner. I've seen him. I can recognize him and his wife. I've checked them out. They have the insurance necessary. They have ASC certified technicians. Their history is good, especially now with the internet and all the places you can attaboy somebody and flame them. The idea is that I know them. I know their capabilities, and I've spaced them apart somewhat so one doesn't overlap the other area, although I've got a couple areas that I don't have one in. Nevertheless, it's a good idea. Kurtz Automotive is on my list. Since 1987, he's been open. He's got three master technicians, him, Eric, and Jeff. Those two young guys can fix cars and identify problems in the top 10% of our industry. They are really, really good. So Kurtz is I-17 in Bell Road. He's in Phoenix. And if you live in that area and you don't have a great shop, may I suggest that you try them for something insignificant and see how you're treated. Let's go back to the phones, and that's where we're going to start. And as soon as I get my paper out, I think Barb was first, and she is. Barb, good morning.
Good morning. I have a 2008 Hyundai Sonata, six-cylinder. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But when I back out of the garage or back out of a parking place and move forward and turn, I get a squeaking sound in the steering column. I've had it in three times, and they really can't find anything wrong with it.
Okay. That's a tough one because steering columns, under that kind of situation where you turn the steering wheel and it starts with backing up and then it continues forward for a little bit of time, is that correct?
Yeah, it doesn't continue on when I'm just driving.
Okay. Let me have you do something different, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I want you, when you're in your car and you're going to back up, mm-hmm. I want you to roll all the windows down. And I want you to, when you back up, this is a two-footed operation. I want you to gently apply the brake and go ahead and give it a little bit of gas.
Mm-hmm.
Is the squeak gone? Now, the next morning, I don't want you to touch the brake pedal. I want you just to back up normally.
Mm-hmm.
It is entirely possible, it's at least a 50-50 shot, that the brakes are dragging a little bit in the morning. That's it. It happens a lot. That's why I want you to roll your windows down.
Oh, okay.
Okay? And so when you hold the brake just ever so gently, then mm-hmm. you're putting the pads up against the rotor, and the pads can't vibrate like a guitar string. So if you say to the shop, if I back up without touching the brake, otherwise I hold the brake, put it in reverse, and I let go of my right foot, and I put it on the accelerator. When I back up, there's a squeal or a squeak or a mm-hmm. whining noise, mm-hmm. and it's speed related. So if I go slow, the squeak is slow, and when I go faster, it's faster. But if I back up or go forward and I gently apply the brakes, then it goes away. You know, if you came into some of the shops, including my own, with that kind of symptoms and those kinds of words, we'd hug you. Because we don't get that. And you've just saved yourself a whole lot of money. A whole lot of money. Here's another thing. In this time of the year is obviously moisture. There's a lot of moisture in the air. So the rotors that spin and the pads that squeeze on the rotors will develop a slight amount of rust overnight. So when you back up, you're just kind of vibrating the pads and knocking the rust off, which is no big deal. The rust is no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I'm going to guess that after that happens initially, then there is no more squeak for the rest of the day.
Right.
Okay. The steering column wouldn't change. If we had something in the steering column where we've got the lubrication is gone and we got a metal to metal, it would never change. So just work with me on this and try to do that. And then if you can duplicate it every morning, then you can describe to them how to do it. Or you can say to them, I'm going to park my car right there tomorrow morning. You open at 7:30. I'll be here at 8, and I want you to put a technician in the car. I'm going to back up and drive forward and show him exactly what I want him to do. If you did that, you'd save yourself $50 to $75 worth of diagnostic.
They've checked it three times and can't find anything wrong with it.
Well, and here's the problem is if you keep pointing them in the area of the steering column, that's all they're going to look at.
Well, no, they checked the brakes and they checked, you know, everything. I just keep driving and I don't drive a lot, but I don't think it's anything that I have to, you know.
Well, we don't know if it's something you have to worry about till we know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you drove it in there and they checked it and then you drove it out, then it's not in the environment it is first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And if you took it overnight and then had them and tell them exactly, put the key in the ignition and I want you to back up first. I want you to back up gently. So put the key ignition, start the car, put your foot on the brake, put it in reverse, gently back out, and I want you to back out straight, or I want you to turn to the right or turn to the left. Then I want you to put it into drive and go forward.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be a good description?
Sure. Okay. When I go forward, it's fine.
Okay, that's kind of what I want you to do. And see, the steering column would have nothing to do with, yes, it squeals in reverse, and then no, it doesn't in drive. I promise you, it's not the steering column. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Barb. You're welcome. Gilbert, what's up?
He dropped.
Oh, okay. Let me read something to you, folks. And here's the problem in our industry right now, in the auto repair industry. In the old days, the cars had to come in for services at 30, 60, 90. And then, of course, in the old days, we were changing your oil every 3,000 miles. So we got to look at you and your car a lot. So we could sell you stuff because there was a lot of stuff there. So today, we have synthetic oil, which is 10,000-mile change. In 100,000 miles, you're going to do 10 oil changes. What's the math of 100 divided by 3? It's like 33.
Right.
33 oil changes versus 10 in 100,000 miles. And most of the things on your car are going to be, they're going to be in your owner's manual as to look at them hard and replace them at 75 to 100. So we don't get to look at you every 3,000 miles. We don't get to look at your car every 10,000 miles. We don't get to do that anymore. So we're making up stuff like, you need to flush your injectors.
Or just like they told the guy last night.
Yeah,
spark plugs,
yep.
And throttle body.
Now, see, here's the problem. You don't have to know nothing about cars. You just say, what symptoms are you going to fix with the throttle body cleanup for $79 to $150? What symptoms do I have today? They can't answer that because there isn't any. Now, here's the deal. If they say your throttle body's really dirty and you say, well, what symptoms? And they say, well, doesn't it idle poorly in the morning? Yes, it does. Isn't intermittently it kind of idles rough and intermittently it idles okay? Yes, it does. Okay, that's the symptoms. So you're going to fix that problem with your $75 to $150. And I'm using a range.
Sure.
It's not going to be $75 or $150. It's going to be somewhere in the middle. So you say, oh, well, that'll fix it. We're done.
1 minute.
We're done. The other thing is you can say to them, you know, just humor me. My husband is a weirdo, or my wife's brother is a car guy. Let me go get the owner's manual, and you show me where it says that I'm due for that. I want to tell you something. That's the best question in the world. Show me in my manual where I'm due for that. That's a tough one. So what symptoms are you going to fix? Now, they say you need lower control arm bushings, and the symptom is every time you come to a stop, clunk, and every time you take off, clunk. And they say, I'm going to fix that with the lower control arm bushings. We're done. That's it. So it's just that simple. So that's kind of self-defense for car expense. So show me, and then you're going to hear this. I love it when you hear this. Well, I don't have enough time to tell you, so about 3 minutes later, I'm going to tell you what I love to hear. 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to be here till 12. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car problem, you can call in, and we're going to talk about symptoms, what year, what make, what model, how many miles have you got on it, and then we're going to talk about what might be wrong with your car. Folks, I am absolutely no better than the guys on the Internet of telling you what's wrong with your car. But what I can do is put you on the right track to help you find out what's wrong with your car. They're not interested in doing that. They're just saying, if you have this code, then this is the repair. And nothing could be further from the truth. You don't have to worry about that at Automatic Transmission Exchange. They've been around since 1968. Fred put the first transmission in Fred Flintstone's stone car. He's been around a long time. Phil has done everything from starting at the very beginning as a young man to taking the transmissions out, changing the fluid, all the way to the new electronic ones. So they've been there and done that. It's the only transmission shop in the city of Phoenix that I recommend, 40th Street in Washington, Automatic Transmission Exchange.
So we're talking about the owner's manual.
Yeah, that's the part I love.
Okay.
It's kind of, let's pretend, you know, you and I, I'm the service writer. Mrs. Johnson, you really need a lot of your fluids changed, brake fluid, transmission fluid, cooling system, differential fluid, stuff like that.
Can you show me in my owner's manual where it says that?
Well, Mrs. Salem, your owner's manual is not for Arizona. It's not written for Arizona. We have a different climate than anybody else.
Okay. Well, would you order me an Arizona manual for my car then, please?
That's the greatest question in the world. Because there is no Arizona owner's manual.
Right.
And they're not going to be able to order you
one. Minnesota, where it's much colder.
Yep. And the I-10 corridor is the worst. That's from really California all the way across to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And through Texas, 864 miles through Texas and Arizona as well in the summertime. We're talking about the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no manual for Arizona. The window is just written just fine for all the different states. So this idea that if you ever hear that Arizona has its own manual, then just order one.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you what. If you can buy a manual that says for Arizona only, I'll pay for the manual times 10, times 100.
Oh.
If the manual's $30 times 100.
And you can't make it yourself, folks.
That's right. You can't use a black magic marker on the cover and say, for Arizona only. So that's really what it's all about. Here's some more. This is why our industry is the way it is right now. For the first time since the Great Recession, this is right out of a major magazine, the average U.S. car dealer operated at a financial loss in 2018.
Okay.
After adding all the income from the dealership's department, which is new car, used car, service, and parts, the typical dealer lost $13,000 last year, compared to a profit of almost $500,000 in 2013.
Wow, that's huge.
That's a huge number. The reason why is because the cars don't come in as often. They come in one-third as often as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
One-third. So, again, 10,000-mile oil changes on synthetic oil. And, gosh, synthetic's been an oil for cars for the last 2 or 3 years easy.
Right.
So, if you look at the oil cap, put the oil in that the oil cap says. But a 020, everybody knows that's a synthetic. They don't make a conventional. They don't make a blend. That's a synthetic.
Yeah.
And Mobil 1 says, you know, anywhere from 12 to 20. Some of the other guys say 12 to 15. Some of the other guys say 10 to 12. My personal is 10.
Mm-hmm.
I'm comfortable, and that's what I do on my own cars, is 10. Here's the problem. My wife never checks her own oil.
I don't.
Neither do my daughters.
Neither do you. Don't lie.
Well, I do.
You
oh,
do.
No. I do. I do. Every other time I get gas, I'm going to raise the hood, especially since Alan put that new valve cover on,
mm-hmm.
and we've had a little bit of leaking problem.
Right.
So
yeah.
I've been pulling the dipstick every single time on that one. I don't want to lose a motor.
Okay.
I can show you pictures. And I told him.
You take pictures.
Yeah, I took pictures of the oil leak, and I took pictures of the catch can,
yeah.
and I said to him, I don't know which one it is. And he said, pull the dipstick. This is what happened to us. He's talking about the dipstick in the engine.
Okay.
I'm talking about the dipstick in the catch can.
I don't know what a catch can is.
This is a new valve cover. It's really pretty, as you know.
Yeah.
It's all buffed out and colored, and it has the name of our company on it.
Mm-hmm.
So he had those made from a friend of his that owned a machine shop. At the end of the day, there's a catch can for oil. It has a dipstick. So I say to him, it's a quarter an inch from the bottom. And he goes, you need to be careful. And I go, well, okay, quarter of an inch from the bottom. So we're talking, and then it occurs to me that I'm saying a quarter of an inch on a 3-inch dipstick, and he's thinking it's the dipstick in the motor.
Oh, okay.
And he goes, is it below the ad mark? And I said, well, there's no really ad mark on it, son, but it's really low on the dipstick.
Mm-hmm.
So he's thinking, Dad's driving around with one quart when he needs 12.
Right.
Well, within a few minutes, we recognize he's on Venus and I'm on Pluto.
You're on Mars.
Yeah.
Which you usually are.
Very funny. Anyway, 602-508-0960. They go on to talk about retailing new vehicles is unprofitable for most dealers. And an average car is sold for a loss. Do you know why? Because the rebates are so big.
The
manufacturers say, move this many cars and we'll give you a rebate. Now, I understand the rebate's slightly bigger than the profit.
Mm-hmm.
So if they sell the car at cost or less than cost, no matter what, the rebate they get is bigger. But here's the real problem. I'm going to get there. He knows I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
He knows I'm going to be late this time. Here's the deal. The new thing is we have to create profit centers in other areas. We have to elevate the profit at the dealership level and to some extent at everybody's level. New cars, used cars, service, and parts. Bingo, 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 bingo.
Yeah.
We've seen our parts bill go up because the parts are going up in price. So if we're not making a bunch of money on new cars, we better make them on used cars. We better make them on service and parts. And there's one other area of the dealership where they make the most money. Where's that?
I don't know. I would say on like the tires and wheels and all those fancy things.
Accessories, you're
there
right.
There you go.
So there is one more. Okay. Financing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So financing, you're right. Aftermarket attachments or dressing the vehicle up. Mm-hmm. Parts, service, used cars, and new cars. That's the difference. In the independent repair shop, we just got repairs. We don't have finance, and we don't have all of that kind of stuff.
Well, and that's why all of your trade magazines, it's how to upsell the customer. I mean, everything you read anymore is...
Trade magazines that are sent to guys like me who own repair shops.
Right.
And the whole magazine is how to improve your profits, how to sell more, and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. You know, it occurs to me that when I talk about Fred Flintstone and his stone car, there's a whole group of people out there that probably have no idea what I'm talking about.
There you go.
It's just one of those things. I'll tell you something else just between you and me and no one else.
Okay.
I've been watching different newscasts in the mornings. I get up at 5 and I've noticed that there's a couple of them that have really focused towards the millennials.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about chime in here and go to our Facebook page and tell us what you think and all that kind of stuff. I think that our generation could care less about what they want us to do. Just give us the news, Walter Cronkite. Tell us what's going on. Give it to us in a neutral way. And stop with all the dancing in front of the weather screen. Stop with all the Vanna White pointing and
all
that
kind of... You're getting old, dear. That's what...
Yeah, I could be getting old, but I am venting to you because it's been bugging me for a long time. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I bet I get a call on that.
Oh, yeah, you probably will.
Because there's a lot of older guys like me
right.
who just forget that.
Right.
Just forget that.
Because they do
that.
Share their own opinions
quite
a bit. Yeah.
And then they sit there and yak. Just yak, yak, yak. Who cares? Just give me the news. That's
Speaking of yak.
What? Go ahead.
You're quite a yakker yourself.
You know what? I got a yak for 2 hours, okay? I got a yak for 2 hours. 602-508-0960. That's the phone call to come in. Gil will answer the phone. He'll ask you what your name is, and then he'll put you in queue, so to speak, and then he'll whisper in my ear, Mark's on the phone. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go, oh, well, good morning, Mark. That's how it works.
Okay.
I don't even know. Gil, are we on a delay? Where there's a 5-second delay in case I say a bad word.
That's correct.
Oh, we are on a delay.
Of course.
So if I say something bad.
You think they can trust you without a delay? I don't think so.
Gil pushes the button real fast.
That's right.
If I use a bad word.
Well, not for you, Mark.
Oh, not for me, he says. I don't think he's ever bleeped me. And how long have we been there since 2000? We've been here since 2011.
We might not hear it. He might be bleeping.
Well, Jeremy
a lot.
And I, we've taken turns helping out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Larry Harker's Autos at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Again, he's one of the best shops I've got. All of them I know personally. I know Bob and Ellen. I have their cell phones. But here's the good news. I don't ever use them because I don't have the reason to call them. I'm not mad at them. No customer's mad at them. Everybody plays by the rules. So Larry Harker's been around since 67, 38th Avenue and Indian School. And they got Jeremy, who's a master tech. He's passed all the ASC certifications. Now, I've passed all the 8 automotive ones, but he's got buses and big trucks, and he's got paint and body, and he's got every single ASC. He's one of, I think, 2 guys in the United States that has passed every single test. So, folks, this guy has a master from hair to toenails as far as a car is concerned. So he's a good guy, but a lot of shops fix cars good, but Larry Harker's has a technician that none of the rest of them have. Okay, we've got a caller.
Okay.
Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Dave.
Dave, good morning.
Oh, good morning. First-time caller.
Oh.
But pretty frequent listener.
Okay, thank you.
I had a comment that I wanted to pass on to you that might help one of the listeners that called in about a car that had windows that wouldn't go up or down. Both windows were a problem.
Okay.
I have an old Ford Explorer, 2003. It's got about 205,000 miles on it, and still running pretty good. But all of a sudden, one day, about 4 or 5 months ago, none of the windows would work. And I couldn't figure out what the problem was. I thought it was a fuse that I checked on my user's manual or the owner's manual and checked the fuse, looked good, but I replaced it anyway. Still wouldn't go up or down. Later, I took it to a shop, and they diagnosed it as a 60-amp fuse. And so replaced that fuse, and now it works great. But here's my problem. That fuse keeps blowing out. I've probably put in about 5 fuses in the last 6 months.
Okay.
I'm wondering what...
This is easy.
I think it might be.
This is easy, and thank you for calling in. The 60-amp fuse runs more than the windows.
Yes, it does.
So you have to isolate each one of those. So let's pretend. Let's just pretend, because this is not the correct list, that we've got the wipers and the radio and the air conditioning and the windows. Okay?
Okay.
So we've got all those on the fuse. So we just don't use the wipers at all.
Uh-huh.
We might even disconnect the switch. We're not going to use the windows. We're going to put tape over the switches, and we're going to tell our family that if they touch the button, then they have to get out and walk home. So we're not going to use our air conditioning. We need to isolate which one of those is causing the fuse to blow. Now, most of us have really good customers. So oftentimes what we'll do is we'll hook up a meter to that fuse, and we'll have the customer monitor the meter, which is an amp meter. And so we're going to look, and normally that thing's running at 8 to 10 to 12 amps on the draw. Just keep an eye on it, and when you do something different, and all of a sudden you do something, and all of a sudden the amp draw goes, boom, 60, 70 amps, then you go, okay, I understand. So there's lots of things that you can do, but the easiest thing to do is identify exactly what is on that fuse, and it's more than the windows. And then I'll just isolate the operation of each one of those. Now, it could be dome lights, and so you're going to watch a flicker for the dome light.
Okay.
So I'm just giving you an example. So, you know, you just get in and you look at it, and you shut the door and look at it and stuff like that.
How would I do that? In other words, should I pull the fuse out and put an amp meter in there in place of the fuse?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, and then just watch the amp meter reading. When each one of those features is isolated and working.
Yes. Yeah, you know, I would put it where your speedometer's at. You know what I mean? Just use some duct tape or something, put it where the speedometer's at.
Yeah.
And then just keep an eye on it. Now, this is every time you do something. So if you're going straight down the road and you're set on cruise control, I'm just throwing poop on the table, if air conditioning application, fan application, wiper application, window application, seat application, stuff like that. So you're going to look for what spikes it. Now, another possibility is identify what it is and just disconnect everything and then plug it in one at a time. So, I mean, we can do that. This could be a $75 to $200 diagnosis, but you can cut that in half if you can send them to the right circuit. You can cut it in half. That's what I'm guessing. You can cut it in half.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Well, I have an amp meter, so I'll give it a try. Thanks.
Yeah.
I really appreciate the help.
You're welcome. Test it, too. Put your amp meter in on either side of the fuse. You'll need some blades there. And so then open the door. Find out what's on that circuit, and then apply that circuit and look at the amp. Now, obviously, nothing should exceed the 60 because that keeps popping it. Now, let me ask you a question. The plastic part of the 60-amp fuse, is it melted or not?
No, it's never melted.
Okay, good. That means we don't have a huge draw. Otherwise, it would be melted. So, no part of the fuse is melted. You're home free. And would you do me a favor? Call me back and let me know what you find.
Sure. I'd be happy to.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks so much for the help.
You're welcome. Thank you. We keep talking. Oh, Gil's not going to let me talk.
Okay.
Who is Gil? I'm happy to have a caller. Tell me who it is.
That'd be Rick.
Rick. Good morning, Rick. What can I do for you
today? Good morning. How are you today?
You know, I'm good, except my wife is keeping track of me today. So As soon as I get done with the radio show, I'm going to go out and get on my motorcycle and tell her I'm going to go down to Circle K, and then I'm not coming back for a couple hours.
I was going to say, make her go up to Payson and listen to trades and sales.
Exactly, exactly.
Something exciting like that.
You know what?
Could you make it 3 or 4 hours instead of two? Oh, I'm
he's
just
on
teasing.
The phone?
Oh. No, listen, listen. It's true, though. You have to admit that when we're in Payson, Saturday morning, you're hitting the garage sales, and you hit some of the, I'm not going to give away your secrets, some of the stores in town that you might have a bargain. But then you have a little place that you sell that kind of stuff. So, Rick, you're absolutely, and in Tempe, it's no different. In the mornings, you love those estate sales.
Yeah, it's kind of cold right now, so nobody's having them.
Okay, all right, that's fine. Anyway, Rick, continue on.
Hey, I have all three Thunderbird convertible, and power top was having a problem going up and down, and so I took it into a place, none of your places, and when I got it back, the power top went up and down a couple of times, and then it wouldn't go all the way up again. So when I was looking down in the compartment where the pump is, I noticed that one of the lines had gotten pinched, and it was, like, crushed. You know, it's plastic.
Right.
But so I was able to get another motor and pump. I was wondering, when I'm filling this thing, you know how it's got the little rubber cork in it?
Uh-huh.
You know, where you put the fluid?
Yeah.
Is there any easier way than, you know, put some fluid in and then put the cork back in and try and cycle it to make it go up and down?
Okay. Can you see the hydraulic arms that make it go up and down? The hydraulic cylinders? Okay, here. Now think about this. Okay? When the arms are relaxed and they're down, then the fluid level is static. When we extend the arms, then the reservoir is going to go down. Okay?
Yeah.
So if you extend the arms and fill up the reservoir, as soon as you retract the arms, you're going to have oil everywhere.
Exactly.
There you go. That's the answer you were looking for.
Well, can I loosen the nuts, or, you know, where they go into those arms to kind of bleed them out?
I don't think you need to bleed them out, or at least we don't bleed them out. We just operate the thing up and down a couple of times over the period of a half an hour, and and you're going to automatically bleed the system by extending and collapsing those cylinders.
Where does that air escape from then?
You know, I don't know the dynamics, but I know that air collapses, and we can take a gallon of air and squeeze it to the head of a pin, but we can't take a liquid. If we have a gallon of liquid, we can't compress it to any more than a gallon of liquid. So I would imagine that as it extends, it pushes the air out the reservoir. I don't know, but that's how we do it.
And one other question. A couple of weeks ago, you had a body paint gentleman on your show, and I was trying to get through to you guys. I've been seeing a couple of cars. One was a Mercedes SUV and then a Challenger also that were painted gold. It looks like the vehicles are actually dipped in gold. It's neat. Neat paint job. I don't know how they're doing it, if it's one of those, not paint, but...
It's a wrap. It's a wrap.
It is a wrap.
Yeah, it is a wrap.
It is a wrap.
Yeah. I have my truck wrapped. And it's to my displeasure that it was wrapped because I'm very obvious. But I didn't do my one-ton dually in gold. That would have been embarrassing to park in front of my shop. But there is a Mustang up here in Payson. I think it's a Mustang that's got a beautiful chrome wrap on it. It's just awesome looking. You just can't take your eyes off of it. Now, if you're going to do a wrap and you want to get a price, may I suggest...
Well, I don't know if they do.
Well, we're going to send them there anyway.
Blue Media. In Tempe.
Yeah, call them and talk to Blue Media. Yeah. And that's who does our wraps. They did our shuttle bus and they did my truck. I think that's it. Oh, they did two of my trucks. So Blue Media, and say, do you do this? And can you give me a gold or whatever? What colors do you have that are really bright and shiny? And do you do it? And if so, how much is it going to cost? They've got kids in that arena
that are these really little turdy, nerdy guys, and they sit in front of a computer, and they make, you know, they get your exact car, and they get all the dimensions, and they print it on a printer that might be 20 feet wide. So they print all these things, and then they have another guys that come out. Calm down. Okay. Calm down. I got this. They have another guys that come out and put it on. So it's pretty, really impressive, but Blue Media is the place to go. 602.
Blue Media.
Yeah. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. All the lines are open. So there's five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I'm just killing time because you curried me up and I still got 30 seconds to fill for Gil. So anyway, 602-508-0960. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. And if you have any complaint about this show, then here's the easy part. The easy part is call the show and complain on Gil. He's the operator. Complain on Gil. And we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. My wife is out in the barn, probably looking over all of her treasures that she gets from garage sales. But nevertheless, I'm here by myself, and I can handle it. Real quick, let me tell you about a really good shop, and that's Tom Blackwell, Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. We've been friends for 20 years. We are cut from the same cloth. Both of us know right from wrong. Both of us aren't shy about raising our hand and yelling foul. And both of us have no problem of using the old day 1950s, 1960s, 1970s human resources ideas to take a technician into our office and chew the back pockets out of his Levi's. And I think that's what happened, but I'm not really sure. Nevertheless, Tom Blackwell's a good guy, and those of you in Northeast Scottsdale, the only shop I've got in your area is at 40th and Greenway, and that's Tom Blackwell Auto. Okay, let's go to the phone. Oh, real quick. At the end of the hour last, my wife is going crazy. She's touching me on the arm. She's pointing to the sun. She's looking over here, looking over there, and she's thinking I'm going to miss my out. My out at the end of the hour is 58:50. 58 minutes, 50 seconds. Now, we're in a radio studio that's surrounded by clocks. Gil and I synchronize clocks, but the clock, for me, is time.gov, and it's on the screen in front of me. But there's other clocks, and this one's 31 seconds different, and she's looking at the clock that's 31 seconds different and yelling at me to take a break, but I'm looking at a different clock. So that's the reason why she's not here. She's been fired. Nevertheless, Jim, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. It's really sort of a fortuitous call that I'm making right now because I'm well up in years, as is my car, and I really don't have much need. But I do listen to your show from time to time, and I even though I have no real need normally, it's very entertaining. I really respect you and the service that you offer, and in the manner you offer it, with a bit of humor and high integrity and good information. So my compliments to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Look, I'm I'm up in years, and my car is an 02 Chevy Cavalier, okay. Not what you'd call a dream lover's car, but it serves me well. I only drive about 3,000 miles a year, so it serves me fine. But tires are an issue. The tires I've got on the car are 10 years, plus or minus.
Okay.
And it just so happens that this morning when I turned on the radio, it was on your station, and you're talking about tires. And I missed the very first part of what you were saying. But anyway, I've got to drive this weekend maybe 100 miles on the freeways, and I do have 10-year tires. And, in fact, last time I had them aired up, the person told me that a couple of them looked like they were getting a little bit well, I forget what she said, but they're a little bit rough on the outside.
Okay.
My question is this. Since I have to use them this weekend and to take a chance on not dying, what pressure, if you're running marginal tires, and I will get tires this coming week,
okay.
Especially now that I've listened to your show, but what would you run them at the normal pressure, or would it be more safe to run them since I'll be on highway speeds or freeway speeds with old tires like that? Where would be the best pressure, lower than required or at top?
No, there's you're talking about three different pressures, and I'll just clarify them. Lower than the sticker on the door, at the sticker on the door, or at the tire's maximum inflation written on the side of the tire. Okay, you're talking about three different Never, to answer your question, we never run below this door sticker. Never. So if it says 32, you'd be a fool to run 28. So okay. If I were you and I was going with you, first of all, I'd take my rosary along, but I don't think you're going to be in trouble. And are you talking about 100 miles round trip or?
Yeah. I'm in Central Phoenix. I got to run over to Mesa and okay.
No problem. I think, first of all, you're going to be at City Street, a city and maybe some highway. Number two, we're not experienced in the cold or the hot weather we would in June or July or August. You're not going to take all your girlfriends, so you're not going to have the car fully loaded. And so I think you just maintain speed. I think you're okay. Now, if you're, where do you live exactly? Give me major cross streets.
Central Avenue and Glendale Avenue.
Okay. If you were somebody, I don't know how to put this. I don't want to hurt his feelings. If you were somebody I love, I would send
he's a listener. He's,
yes. Okay. All right. I would send you to Discount Tire. They're not going to let you leave with 10-year-old plus tires. Is it possible these are as old as the car from 2002?
No, I don't think okay. so. In fact, I had the ages looked at some time ago, 2-3 years ago, and I remember then that they were coming up on 10 years. All four of them are different, of course. They all weren't manufactured the same month.
Right, right.
They're all roughly around 10 years.
Okay.
They do have reasonable tread left, so that's why I really haven't paid that much attention to
okay,
them.
Okay, that's not a good thing.
That's not a good sign, right?
Yeah, I work for insurance companies and lawyers, and I've seen lots of tires that are north of 10 years old that have beautiful tread on them. So it's a matter of the compounds of the tires are going to break down, and they're going to break down because of three reasons, load, speed, and temperature. So you're not going to load it going to Mesa. I'm not worried about the temperature, and I'm not worried about your speed. So I want you to know I don't have a crystal ball, but I can tell you this much. If you invited me to go with you, I'd go with you. So I'm not worried about that.
That says a lot. Thanks. Now, the other question I have is since, I'm 80 years old and 3,000 miles a year, that's 30,000 miles before I'm gone. And so if I'm quality conscious and safety conscious, you know, those 3,000 miles a year, if they're highway or freeway speeds, I want the maximum safety. So what I'm asking is when you buy a quality tire, is the quality tire always tied to the tread mileage on that tire, or can you buy a very, very high quality tire with less than the maximum tread that's available these days? Okay. Am I making sense?
Yep. Traction, temperature, and hold on just a minute. I'm trying to think. Traction, temperature, and something else. Okay. On the side of the tire, it's going to have two letters and I think a number. I don't know. I mean, I just lost my sight of it right now.
Yeah.
On the side of the tire, it's going to say traction, temperature.
I'll go look.
Okay, go look. And obviously, if you look at the side of the tire, A, it's going to have A, B, or C. So traction is going to be A, B, or C. And typically, the highway tires are going to be A, and then we're going to go down, and traction is going to be traction. So you don't need a traction tire. Temperature, its ability to withstand high or low temperatures. And then there's another number there that's a numerical number. I just can't think of what it is, but she's going to go out and look. I think it's an expected life of the mileage of the tire. I think you should look at that. Look at the tires they have to offer and tell them, I want the best number and letter on the side of the tire. Now, do I think you need the best number and letter? No, I don't. I don't think you need that. But if you want some measurement on the sidewall of the tire, is traction, temperature, and something else. She'll be back in a minute. So the other point is, if you want a tire, I'm not doing advertisements for tires, but I can tell you this much. I've been working on cars for 40-plus years. The tire we sell is Toyo's. It's made in Atlanta, Georgia, and they make 55,000 tires a day. So it's American workers, blah, blah, blah. The real issue with me is that it's better than some of the high-dollar, fancy-named ones. And the most important part is, as you say, Mark, what do you have on your wife's car? Toyos. Your car? Toyos. Son's car? Daughter's car? Shop cars? Shop trucks? Toyo, 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 Toyo. So that's what we use, and that's what we sell. And other places sell them. So I would get something like that, because in reality, if you save $100 and you expose yourself to risk, I'm quite sure you and I agree that that's not worth it.
Exactly.
So, and I, as far as 3,000 miles a year, hopefully you're changing your oil once a year, and it's in April or May, beginning of the summer, and we're done. Okay.
Let me ask you one of the. Do you have time? Or
yes.
Have people backed up.
No. Go ahead.
On this car, it's 86,000 miles on the car now. And it runs really good. First question, does this have a timing gear or timing chain? Do you know off the top of your head?
What motor is it?
It's a 2, I think a 2.2.
2.5 maybe, 2.2?
No, 2.2.
Okay. I'm pretty sure it doesn't have a belt. I could be wrong, but I'll tell you how you'd know. I want you to get the VIN number and write it down in front of you. Are you pretty proficient on the internet?
Yeah, it can be.
Okay. I want you to go to Rock Auto.
Rock?
R-O-C-K Auto. And I want you to plug in your 2002 Cavalier 2.2, blah, blah, blah. And then go under timing gear, timing chain. It'll tell you right then. And if it's a chain, you don't worry about it.
That's super helpful. All right.
And if it's a belt, I'd probably put one on just for time. You're kind of over.
Okay, so if it's a belt, if it's a chain, then I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Now, she's given me the information, my right-hand, left-hand lady.
Mm-hmm.
Tread wear is first, A, B, and C. Traction is next, and then the temperature is the third. So you're going to be looking at that temperature, and you're going to want the best in the temperature. You're not going to care about tread wear. You're not going to care about traction. The temperature is going to be the big dog you want.
Okay. So in all three of them are A, Bs, and Cs, right?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Did you see A, B, and C? Hold on.
I didn't look for that. Okay. I mean, I did see something after it, but I didn't pay attention if it was A, B, C.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I'll go to a good shop. They should know some of this stuff.
Yes. Okay.
All righty. Well, listen, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your calls. Thank you very much for your compliments. That's very nice. I've got Marty and Lee. And, Marty, I'm going to get your question, but I'm going to have to take a break. So let's do that. Marty, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, so I have a 2008 Subaru Forester with 220,000 miles. And it started running rough. At first I didn't get any codes, and then I started getting like an intermittent cylinder one misfire.
Okay.
So I swapped the – it's a coil unplug, so I swapped the coil and the plug, and it stayed at cylinder one. And so I did a compression test. Compression test was good, but it smelled like fuel. So it's such a pain to get to the injectors, since I didn't want to swap it and then have to go back in if one was bad. So I just ordered four refurbished ones. I put them in last night, started it, still was running rough with cylinder one, and then I came out this morning and decided to take it for a drive, and it was running worse than it ever had. Wouldn't go over 40 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden it was just like the cylinder kicked in, and now it's running smooth and everything is good, so... I don't know if it was just a bunch of junk in the cylinder that finally cleared out and the fuel injector fixed it, or if I can expect it to come back, or what's going on.
Yeah. I think, let me just comment real quick. I think I would have done the coil first, then I would have done the rubber boot second, and then I would have done the spark plug third. If you want to do it that way, it's not a good idea to do all three at once because you don't know.
No, I didn't. I did the coil first.
Okay.
Yeah, I did them in stages, yeah.
All right. And you don't have an oxygen sensor code, which means if that cylinder was being flooded with fuel, then that would create an oxygen sensor code because all of a sudden the oxygen sensor would see little oxygen and a hell of a lot of fuel. So that's you're missing that code. We don't fix cars based on code. You could have a valve spring broken. You could have a valve that's not opening and closing. The real question is, and I'm going to ask you this question and get you on the other side of the break, is when does it do it and when is it better? There's going to be a line there, I hope. Or the answer is Mark, it's intermittent and I can't tell you. Or it's always bad or sometimes it's good. So those are your options and we'll be right back.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and I'm going to get back to... hold on just a minute. I got his name right here, Marty. Stay right there, Marty. Folks, on my list of best car repair shops on my website, marksalem.com, there's a promise to you. This promise applies to all the shops, but I want to talk about strictly diesel service and repair. They're on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. I've known Nate for years and years and years, and if you've got a diesel and you got a problem, you got to take it to Nate. But Nate's included in this, and I've never paid a dime for Nate. It says in there that if you have a complaint about one of my shops and you take the appropriate path, which is a dispute resolution path, and you go through something like that, and then the shop is told to either make a repair or give you a refund, and the shop doesn't, I will up to $5,000. Now, I'm going to kick the shop off the list, and they'll never be back there again. But since 1988, I've never had to refund anybody's money. Now, there's been complaints, and they go through the Better Business Bureau or some other dispute resolution process, but the shop has either been exonerated or the shop has been ordered to pay something or fix something, and they have. So that's how good the list is. But Strictly Diesel is certainly one of the best guys on my list. Let's go back to Marty. Marty, on your miss on your Subaru, I think what you're missing is that at the very beginning, if it's missing, we would have stuck a probe in the tailpipe, and the CO and the HC and the NOx and the oxygen would have told us if we had a spark or fuel problem, because right now, you don't know. So that engine miss can be three things: spark, fuel, or compression. We got a valve dancing around in the seat. If we had a valve dancing around in the seat, there would probably be a backfire that you may or may not pick up. But, and then on your compression test, let me ask you this, Marty. A proper compression test is when the engine's cold. You hold your foot down on the throttle all the way. You disable the ignition system, and you crank for the same amount of time on each cylinder. Boom, we're done. Boom, we're done. So the compression test has to be equal in order for you to get the right numbers.
Yeah, so, I did that. They were all the same 140, so that made me feel good because I was worried.
I know, but that doesn't mean that doesn't mean we're all okay, because you're doing it at 200 RPM and the car runs between 700 and 3,000. So it gives you a good look, but I can't tell you what I hear you saying is I got good compression, I have good spark, and I have a good injector, yet I've still got a miss. Now the only other thing.
No, that's what I mean. The miss cleared up this morning, even though it still had it last night after I drove it. So I was wondering if it just cleared a bunch of junk out of the donut. Because now it's running smooth the first time it has in 2 months.
Okay. The answer is I don't know the answer to your question, because I don't know if it's going to do that tomorrow or the next day or the next day. So I can tell you this much. If you have 10 days, 14 days of no problems, then the answer is yes, you're done. Why? I don't know. But the fact of the matter is the end result says that you're done. If it comes back, you have a tough decision to make. You're going to hire somebody to tell you what's the matter with it, or I don't know where else you can guess. Now, there is an EGR on that, and I'd probably pull the line on the EGR, and I'd probably put a golf tee in the rubber line, not in the nipple of the EGR, but in the line. I want to take the EGR out of the issue. So take the EGR out if it comes back to missing, and then see what happens. The EGR will typically affect more than one cylinder, the EGR exhaust gas recirculation valve. So we're going to open it up above idle, and we're going to take some of the exhaust and mix it with the air and the fuel that's being delivered to the engine. Sometimes the EGR will be open at idle, but it won't just kill one cylinder. It'll cause a variety of symptoms. So I don't know, but good luck, and I'm impressed that you were able to pull all those replacements off and still not created a bigger mess than you had before. Lee, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, how you doing? I got one of those 2018 Expeditions. It's got the auto stop when you stop at a stoplight, and it's not working. I took it down. On the dash, it's telling me engine on due to vehicle charging.
Okay.
So I went down and had my battery tested. It's an 800 cold crank, and it tested at 769 cold crank. And I didn't think that was that far off. My wife took it into the dealer, and he said, you just have to turn everything off for that to work. I don't agree with that. It should work, because it works with the air conditioner on in the summertime, and it just shuts off. What's your best guess on that?
You know, I don't have a guess. That's something that I don't think I've ever worked on. Mm-mm. I don't think we've ever had. And folks, by the way, what he's talking about is when you come up to a stop, the engine dies. And so when you hit the brake and it comes to a stop, the engine dies. The minute you hit the throttle, then the engine is started up, and it starts up rather rapidly, mm-hmm. and then you just drive away. And it's supposed to be an emissions issue. We're going to make it throw less emissions, and people are worried about the starter preliminary going bad because we use it at every traffic light. That's not been borne out. We've not seen that at all. In your particular case, there's a signal that's missing. Something's telling the computer that the vehicle's still moving. Something's telling the computer that maybe your brake lights aren't working. Maybe the brake light fuse is popped. Maybe you don't have any brake lights, and the computer monitors the brake lights and the speed, and it says, okay, when I see brake lights, then when I see zero, I'm going to shut the engine off. I'm just hypothesizing right now. So if you see that kind of software, then obviously if the brake lights are out and it sees you slow down, it goes, well, he doesn't want to slow down. He's not at a traffic light. He's not hitting the brakes. So here's the deal. The code is one thing, but what we call serial stream data behind it is another. We see the code, okay, fine, but we're going to look behind it. The AutoZone kid and the O'Reilly's kid and all those CarQuest kids, all they can do is pull codes, and then they give you a piece of paper. The other day I went there just for fun. Mm-hmm. And so it's just the code tells you that it's in Ohio, and then you have to go in and find the city, the street, and the house number. And so the code, I don't fix cars based on codes. It's just, it's an idea that's the general idea. But I've got an engine misfire and I've got a valve dancing. I've got an engine misfire and I got an O2 sensor bad. I've got lots of things. So what part of town do you live in?
2 minutes.
Scottsdale. Let me say one more thing. The service writer at the Ford dealer said there's a secondary battery and they never go bad. Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't. I don't know. The problem is that, you know, you want to go to the cigarette lighter, plug in a voltmeter, and we're looking for 13.4 to 14.6, somewhere around there. So as long as your battery voltage is always up, and when it starts at the beginning, when you're stopped and the car has to start up, the voltage should never drop below 9.6. So, I mean, you can plug in the cigarette lighter and look at all the voltage. I don't know if the secondary battery's bad, but I don't know. He was in Scottsdale. Are you in Scottsdale? I'd call Bell Automotive on McDowell and talk to Craig, and I would just ask him if he wanted to look at this. He's a really good diagnostician, and he's on my list of car repair shops. So he's in Scottsdale. Okay. If you're going to go north, then Blackwell at 40th and Greenway. Those would be the two dogs that I'd send you to. Well,
yeah, we're closer to the 40th and Greenway. We live 52nd and Greenway.
So. Okay, just tell Blackwell that you know that he can't fix it, but Salem thought he'd send you a bone and see if you could take care of it. If you tell him that Salem says he can't fix it, he's going to ride his white horse and flog that dog until he fixes it, until he identifies it, and then he's going to call me up and go, nah, 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 and I'm going to hang up on him. That's what's going to happen. Now, I tell you that, Lee, and I want to clear this up. It's stupid for me to have to say this, but I insist. I don't make a dime off your transition or your transaction. Not a dime. Everybody knows I'm not in it for that. He's not going to send me a percent of your bill or a $10 bill or $10. Send me a happy birthday dancer. That ain't happening. So I just wanted to let you know. Anyway, thanks, Lee. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. My wife, Renee, is sitting here. We've been in the car repair business since 1979. And we've been around the block a couple of times. I'm an ASE master. I have been for, I don't know, 15 or 20 years. And so I kind of know what I'm talking about. Our shops have fixed thousands, hundreds of thousands of cars. And we have really good technicians, and all of them are ASE certified. But this show isn't about my shop. It's about you and your questions. Let me tell you real quick about another shop, Action Autos at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since the 80-81. He opened up his shop in 1983. He's a good guy. He knows right from wrong. He's exactly the kind of guy that you'd want living next to you, because he can fix your lawnmower. He can fix your diesel. He can fix anything in between. but he has a really great staff that supports him, and they've got ASE Master Technicians there as well. So I-17 in Deer Valley, Action Auto Repair, northwest corner. My wife went out and got the information. Folks, you have to understand, my hard drive is full. So if I forget something, my RAM is full too. And so my wife will defrag my computer every once in a while. But there are three things on your tire, on the side of your tire. There's the tread wear. In her case, it's 500. The higher the number, the longer the tire will last. But don't go crazy, okay? It's not necessary to go crazy. If my wife has 500, that's about all you need. That's assuming you love your wife. Traction, it's an A, B, C, or number, so traction on her cars is an A. And then temperature, the resistance for temperature is an A as well. So her tires are listed as 500 AA. Those are good numbers. 500, if you have 100, it's probably not a tire I'd buy. So my wife's car, 500 AA. Now, if you look at the DOT number, the last digit, the four digits, tell you when the tire was made. Hers are 1917. 1917. The 19th week of 2017. The 19th week of 2017. That's how you look at all the information on your tires. If you don't see the DOT brand on the outside of the tire, then it's on the inside of the tire. Let's go back to the phones real quick. Bill, you're up first. How can I help you?
A couple of weeks ago, you mentioned your wife had a Ford Edge, and I bought a used one, 17, a couple of months ago. It doesn't seem to be shifting real smoothly, and I don't know if it should be or not. Since she had one, I thought I would call in and see what you can tell me.
Let me ask you what you came from. What's the vehicle you used to drive before you bought the Edge?
A 2007 Hyundai Azera.
Okay. I'm trying to look to see if there's a different shift pattern. Some of the cars have a soft shift pattern, and some of them bark. So the yeah. soft ones are in, and the hard yeah. ones, in, boom, in. So it's quick.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. Yeah. How many miles are on it?
31.
Oh, yeah. What part of town do you live in?
I'm a 25-year customer of Mr. Blackwell.
Oh.
I'm slightly warped.
Well, then join the crowd with the Three Musketeers right here. Go have Tom drive it.
Chrissy runs the shop. Tom doesn't.
I know, but you're going to ask for Tom, or you're going to call and say, hey, can I make an appointment to take a ride with you? Now, I want to tell you something. Tom and his wife have a medical issue with his wife that has just recently come up, and so they've been spending some time at the hospital. And she's not in the hospital. They're just doing some tests. So he may not be around there. You can call Christy and you say, hey, Christy, this is so-and-so. I'm a customer of yours. I've got this new Edge. And can you send your most senior guy with me? And I just want him to drive. I want to drive it first, and I want him to drive it. And I promise I won't have him for more than 20 minutes and see what happens.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, since your wife had one, I didn't know if she had any similar issues.
You know what? She's not here right now. If you drive with your foot on the floor all the time, I'm pretty sure that thing will quick shift on you. She only knows how to drive that way. So now, another thing you can do is manually shift it and make sure it finds a good detent in each gear. Make sure that, and you can just manually pull the lever down, and then you've got that knob, that little pivot switch on the driver's side of the shift handle. So when you pull it down past drive, then you look up on your dash on the left side, and as you push the button, it'll go first, second, third. So you just drive it, and then click the top button, and just see.
It's got the paddles.
Yes. Okay. That's what you should do.
Yeah.
Okie doke. Oh, yeah, here she comes.
Right.
Have you had any shifting problems with your Edge?
No.
Okay, so it shifts good on light or fast throttle?
Yes.
Okay, and when you manually shift it, it shifts okay?
Yeah, I rarely manually shift it. You shift it more than I do, but yeah, because contrary to what he says, he does drive my F car.
Yeah, but
once in a while.
I wear a mask when I do it, though. I have a Yogi Bear mask on it. How many miles has your F car got on it?
99, I want to say.
Okay, he's only at 30. So he's a Blackwell customer. I've sent him over there and just said, hey, have him take a ride.
Yeah, no, mine's been good.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Thank you very much. And let's see. I'm going to take Glenn anyway. Glenn, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Well, thank you. I have a question concerning deep cell RV batteries.
Okay.
Can you describe to me what value the amp hour, what information that's giving me?
Well, I think, yes, I can. The difference between a car battery and an RV battery, what we call house batteries for the box, is easy to know. The engine battery has to provide a lot of power to crank the engine over. The RV batteries don't have to crank over anything. The draw on them might be at the very most 10 amps. So the amp hour says, this is what we think this will give you if it's not on the charger. This is some derivative of how long this battery will last before it drops below a certain voltage. And I want to tell you, I don't know the answers to any of those at all. I just don't. And I've been in RVing since 1978, and we own an RV right now. So I'm not real worried about it. You only got two batteries that you can put in there. There's Trojans and some other golf cart battery that you can use. But when I put golf cart batteries in our shop golf cart, and when I put them in my RV, I'm looking for price. That's all I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. That, any of that
this battery, this battery's not going in a vehicle. It's charged. It's running an inverter at this guy's house that doesn't have any electricity, and he wants to, you know, buy a new deep cycle battery for his, just to simply run his inverter. And we're trying to figure out what value does the amp hour, what does that tell us, you know, how long the battery's going to go before requiring a charge.
Yeah, it's ability, it's a time number that's its ability to deliver the appropriate power over a long period of time. Let me make a real simple suggestion to you. Why don't you get a solar panel, a small solar panel, and hook it up to the battery?
He has one.
Okay,
but he needs to replace his mule, if you will.
Okay, all right. If he can value, if I were him, I'd look at price and amp hours numbers. That's what I'd look at, and I would probably focus more on price than the amp hour. Besides, I think once you start looking, I think you're going to find that the amp hours are all now. The golf cart batteries I just replaced the other day were a big amp hour, and that was mandatory. But here's why. Here's why. This thing has a regenerative position on it. So when you're driving this golf cart, first of all, it'll do 32 miles an hour. But the motor is a DC motor. So the five batteries are converting to a 110. And then from there, it goes to a 110 motor. And so as a result of that, we got to create a lot of electricity. And those batteries have to be able to run a board to convert to an AC. They're going converting from a 12-volt DC to a 120 volt AC. So,
gotcha.
And that's so a short low draw is an RV, and a big 300, 400 amp on an automotive battery is cranking the engine over. Okay, Glenn, thank you very much for that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. All the lines are open. You're welcome to grab one. I didn't write down my number in the break so I can edit the show, and I apologize for that. Real quick, let me tell you about a really great shop, Auto Dynamics. He's in Sun City. He's been family-owned and operated since 1982. Derek is the one that runs it. His father started it, Chuck Nide, and Derek Nide, he runs it. He's exactly the kind of kid you'd want. Kid, I say kid. He's a father to a variety of kids. But he's young, and he's smart, and he's honest, and he has tremendous integrity. Unlike his dad, but tremendous integrity. He'll hate me for that. So if you're in Sun City, may I suggest that you try Auto Dynamics, and they're just north on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. And let's go to the phones, and the phones would be Mike. Mike, what can I do for you?
Hey, my name is Mike. I have a little question scenario situation. I have a 2004 GMC Sierra, and I got 280,000 miles on it. I bought it brand new. So it's got a lot of miles on it, but I got a 8,000-pound trailer that I've been pulling around with it. Would you recommend having that engine rebuilt or get a 6.0 put in it, or just take it and sell it and get something different?
Okay, three options. Number one, I wouldn't do anything till the motor went bad or started using or leaking oil or had, you know, tremendous blow-by. I want to tell you, every motor that my shop replaces has been damaged by the driver. They've run it long after it was overheated, or they ran it low on oil. I can't tell you the last time we replaced an engine because of miles. And I want to tell you something. I gave you that information the other day. I'm talking to my wife.
Yes.
We had a significant amount of vehicles in our fleet that were over 300, 400, and 500,000 miles.
Yeah, I was surprised, actually.
How many we had. I had to do that for one of my legal cases, and I had to do an analysis. So your 280, almost 300,000 miles doesn't bother me. I think you'll start fouling plugs. I think you'll start consuming oil. I think you'll start leaking oil because blow-by and consumption of oil and all that kind of stuff goes together. With respect to changing it, I think you're asking for a lot of trouble. That when you start moving stuff around, you can't imagine all the things we have to change. Throttle linkage, transmission linkage, exhaust manifolds, then the connection of the pipe from the exhaust manifold to the tail. You've got all these changes. You got heater hose relocations. You got air conditioning line that you have to make new to adapt the old compressor you have to the old fittings that you have. There's nothing easy about that. There's lots of guys that will do that, but I'm not one of them. Now, let me tell you the other side of the coin. I got a 63. That's that Camaro or that Thunderbird Eddie's working on.
No, it's 50 something.
50 something.
Yeah.
This turquoise Thunderbird that was brought in, and he wanted to take the manual out of it and put an automatic. At first blush, I said no. But then we found a transmission shop that we have done business with that raised his hand and says, "Piece cake, done that before." So that Thunderbird is at his shop. That's not something I want. He's got drive shaft problems. He's got cross member problems. He's got to run new cooler lines. He's got to adapt the shift, and he's got to put a console in it to put an automatic in there. It's just, I think the risk is bigger than the reward, but I'm happy to turn it over to guys that raise their hands. So in your particular case, if you don't like it, then just get rid of it and find out what you want. But replacing the motor when you have no reason, this thing could go another 100,000 miles, and I would be right, and you would be wrong.
So it just feels like I'm lacking a lot of torque, you know, climbing up the mountains. My one of my good friends is a 2015 GMC, and we hooked it up to his, and it just pulled it right up toward Sholo, Pine Top, and it was great. And got in my 04 with the same engine, and I got the foot in the floorboard, you know, it's struggling way different.
Okay. Well, if I were looking at it, I'd look for plugged exhaust. I'd look at the timing. And those two things, I think, are what I'd look. And I'd also look at the O2 sensors. I'd look at the O2 sensors, the timing, and the exhaust. And if that thing idles good, and it's not puffing blue smoke, and it's not leaking, there's really no reason why it shouldn't run with the big dogs. There really is no reason. So just because it's got 280,000 miles is not important to me. The fact that it idles smooth, runs good, starts hot and cold, and the fuel economy hasn't changed in the last 100,000 miles, then that doesn't bother me. So there's probably a difference somewhere in the exhaust or in the timing, or it could very well be he's got port fuel injection and you've got throttle body. I don't know that I'm talking about your two vehicles, but those kinds of differences are big. Well, good luck to you, Mike. Thank you very much for the question. Raphael, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning. I have a front-wheel drive Mitsubishi, and I think I got getting a wheel bearing noise in the front. And I'm considering doing it using one of those wheel bearing removing kits.
Uh-huh.
I was just wondering what your thought is on that.
Well, I want to describe the wheel bearing, and you have to match it, okay? So when you're driving down the road, normally if it's a front wheel bearing, it's not noisy. Now, let's pretend you're on the freeway and you're taking a sweeping right turn. So the freeway's going, you know, it's going up and then it's turning right and it's sweeping. Or maybe you're on an on-ramp or an off-ramp. So you would say to me, Mark, going straight down the road is kind of quiet. I don't really hear it. But when I do a right clover leaf and I'm going to make a clover leaf to get off one freeway and on the other, then it's really noisy. And then my question is what about a left clover leaf, a left circle? And you say, no, it's not. Well, think about this. When you're making a right side on the front wheel bearing, the outer one is carrying the load. So the outer wheel bearing on the left side or the inner bearing on the right side is what's wrong. And it's just vice versa if you're making a sweeping left-hand turn. Why don't you just do yourself a favor and take it to some shop and ask them how much they'll charge you to drive it, and if they can determine which wheel bearing is bad. The other option is
is you can replace both of them. And yes, you can rent the tools to do that, or you may need a machine shop to press the bearing on and off. But don't be surprised if you put two wheel bearings in it and you still have the noise. So I would think that you'd want someone else to chime in and say, yeah, I agree with your wheel bearing diagnosis. But I also want to tell you that we service, what, 30, 40 cars a day, somewhere around there? Okay, and we probably run into a wheel bearing once a month. So, and our guys, and like other guys in the industry, they can drive them right file and know exactly what it is. But I can also tell you this. Half the people that come in, approximately, half the people that come in to tell us they have a bad wheel bearing are wrong. Okay? So it's easy enough. We live right off the I-10. So we can make a sweeping left turn off the freeway, or we can make a right sweeping turn off the freeway, and that's exactly what we do. We go drive it, boom, we know what it is. Again, a right turn loads the outer on the left side and the inner on the right side. Now, normally you'll just have noise from one of them. So you'll say, sweeping right, I got a noise. Sweeping left, I don't. So that's what I would do, Rafael. Thank you for that call. That's something we don't get very often, is those kinds of diagnosis. But for the seasoned guy, that's kind of an easy one. All righty, we got another one. What can I do for you? Well, first of all, Gil, can I have the name?
His name is Jack.
Jack, good morning. What can we do for you?
Hi, Jack. Happy weekend.
Well, thank you.
I got a question, a general question about tire pressure. I live at altitude around 7,500 feet, and nearly all my driving is high altitude. So my question is, you see the on the placard in the door, it's got a PSI rating for the tires. The absolute air pressure is about 3 to 4 PSI different at altitude, so what are your thoughts about running higher pressure or the same as on the door? Or, you know, what do you think about that?
Okay. Well, first of all, the tire manufacturer's taken all of that into consideration. So if it says 36 on the door, you put 36 in it. Now, what does the door say versus what does it say the maximum inflation is on the tire?
Well, normally the tires are like 38 or 40 PSI somewhere in there.
You got to look at it, though. It's going to be it's going to be very small riding close to the wheel, and it's going to say maximum load and maximum inflation. Let's just talk about round numbers. Let's pretend you have 36 and 40, okay? They say 36 is the door and 40 is the max. I run all my trucks at max. I run them for a variety of reasons. Number one, I'm less likely to cut the sidewall if my wife hits a big ditch or a pothole, okay? And I'm also less likely to overheat them when I'm towing anything. I'm also going to get the best fuel economy because it's easier to ride a bicycle with tires that are inflated all the way as opposed to one that's half missing. And the tire runs cooler when it's fully inflated than it does when it's not. There's two trains of thought. There's some engineers out there, Charlie Dickerson, Joe Manning, that would probably disagree with me, but I don't care because I sell lots more tires than they do. And they're looking at it from the engineering point of view. But the fact of the matter is that the maximum inflation is fine. But they say to carry the full load of the vehicle that we've designed, you need a minimum of 36 pounds. That's the whole thing. This vehicle, dry weight is 4, and loaded weight is 5. So to get the loaded weight at 5, you need a 36 PSI. That doesn't mean you have to be there at 36. You should be there close to it. But you also, there's a difference between a hot and a cold tire, and obviously you always check the inflation at cold. Honestly, there isn't a horse trailer, a big trailer, my big semi, any of our shop trucks, my wife's car. We run everything at maximum inflation. Now, my wife's car, not too long ago, we noticed that the center of the tire was wearing out, and I think Alan dropped about 4 pounds on your tire. Because, but you also, she also has tires that are 12 inches wide or something like that. So, you're right. If you see abnormal wear in the center of the tire, then you need to drop back down. But a fully inflated tire, based on the numbers, It's less likely to get cut up. It's less likely to be damaged four-wheel drive. Better fuel economy, lower tire temperatures, and that's why.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good luck. All righty, that was Jack, and that was tire pressure.
Yeah, because I noticed a lot of people called, like, right after it got cold, that, oh, my tire light's on, because it makes a difference. But when he's up there and he's checking his tires, it's going to be at a certain temperature, which should be within that range.
Right. And it's really, if he, let's say, pretend it is 35 down at sea level and 35 at 7,000, it's already built in.
Right.
It's already built in. They know that if you put it there one way or another. Mm-hmm. So we all know, too, that a 35 could climb to 40.
Right.
Or 42 or 43 with load, heat, and speed.
Yeah.
So the three things that affect a tire is altitude, but that's the least thing.
Right.
Okay. Speed, like yours. Mm-hmm. Speed, temperature, and environment. Those are the three that really affect tires.
Yeah, and it didn't say anything on the tire about overinflating, but it did about underinflating right on the sidewall. Don't
yes.
underinflate the tires.
So. And I was doing the big trailer when I went to haul those rocks not too long ago.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And then it says on the tire trailer, maximum inflation, 65 PSI. Well, that's what I put in them.
Right.
But it's telling you, if you want the kind of load for the trailer is a 10,000-pound trailer. There's four tires. Each tire has to have 2,500 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But they're saying put it at 20 or 65.
65.
Okay, Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you have a question and you're too shy to call in, Mark with a K at MarkSalem.com. Thank you for spending your Saturday with me. Every Saturday we're here from 10 to noon talking about cars. You can email me your question, but give me your make and model and give me a phone number that I can call you back, because I'd rather ask you some questions. I'm going to call from a blocked line, so if you get a blocked line, you just pick up the phone. Don't say anything, and I'm going to say as fast as I can, this is Mark Salem, and I'm calling you about your email. And then you'll know it's me right off the bat. Otherwise, a lot of people hang up on me. I just call back and leave a message. So, Mark at MarkSalem.com. Drive safely, and if somebody does something nice, stick your arm out the window and say thank you.